You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, August 24th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We've got plenty to get to today. Most importantly, the continuing saga of the Disown Stone movement. I ranted on it a bit yesterday. If you're just figuring this out, you're just joining this story, it's all about the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo and their offering of a keynote speaker spot to Roger Stone, a known racist, a known misogynist, a homophobe, just a terrible human being. And a lot of people in the cannabis community are revolted by it and revolting against it. Not just the Los Angeles event he'll be speaking at, but also an event program for Boston as well come this October. So we've got some updates on that in the cannabis headline news coming up next. We've also got a full-fledged heavy duty rant on this for the end of the show today, because I've been taking some time with the help from the good folks at Media Matters to dig deep into Roger Stone's past and found all sorts of things that I think most members of the cannabis community would not at all be comfortable having this man as a representative of our movement. So we'll bring that to you coming up at the end of the show in an extended radical rant. Stay tuned for that coming up next. Also on the show today, we have a very intriguing episode of the Minority Cannabis Report to get to, Cannabis Minority Report, excuse me, where we talk about Native American interests when it comes to the burgeoning marijuana industry, specifically in the state of Nevada. We spoke with Cassandra Dittus and Joseph Dice earlier this afternoon from Tribal Cannabis Consulting in Nevada. We also had Lori Tom. She's the chair of the Yerington Paiute tribe there in Nevada. So we talked to them about tribal interests, how different tribes perceive the marijuana issues, what sort of regulations are in effect, and most specifically, the recent signing by Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval of SB 375, which does a lot to clear up the relationship between the tribes, the medical marijuana program, and recreational marijuana. We got all that coming up on today's Marijuana Agenda. But first, let's get to the news.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, August 24th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Tom Angel at Massroots has obtained a letter from a bipartisan group of members of Congress asking U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions to stop standing in the way of increased research into marijuana's medical potential. Writing, quote, over 80% of Americans believe that doctor-prescribed marijuana should be legal, according to recent polls, two Republicans and two Democrats wrote in a letter to Sessions on Wednesday. It is worrisome to think that the Department of Justice, the cornerstone of American civil society, would limit new and potentially groundbreaking research simply because it does not want to follow a rule, end quote. The letter references a story the Washington Post published last week, reporting that the Justice Department has prevented the Drug Enforcement Administration from even acting on applications from researchers who want to grow cannabis for scientific studies under a new program. Two court rulings have limited police seizures in the state of Indiana. U.S. District Chief Judge Jane Magnus Stinson partially has halted the seizure of vehicles in drug cases and related crimes in the state. She said state law violates due process because it doesn't allow individuals to challenge a forfeiture before property is seized. State law allows law enforcement to hold a vehicle without taking action for up to 180 days. If the state does file a forfeiture claim, the vehicle can be held indefinitely until the case is completed. The State Court of Appeals has also ruled that an alert from a drug-sniffing dog isn't evidence enough to seize cash that may be tied to drug trafficking. Judge John Baker said a positive alert from a drug dog isn't enough to tie the money to illegal activity because studies show that up to 90% of U.S. currency has drug residue. The legislature has an interim study committee reviewing the state's forfeiture laws. KAKE ABC reports that a four-month petition drive has fallen short in Wichita, Kansas, to reduce penalties for first-time personal marijuana possession to just a $50 fine. The Wichita Peace and Social Justice Center revealed Wednesday night the petitions presented to the Sedgwick County Election Office were declared insufficient. A statement from the center said 2,851 signatures were disqualified for all kinds of reasons. In 1,362 cases, people signed petitions even though they were not registered to vote or had been flagged for not voting in several years. Quote, "Our biggest concern is voter suppression," end quote, the center said in its statement. The election office was closed when the center announced the outcome, so the numbers could not be confirmed. It was also unclear how many signatures were required to put the marijuana question on a ballot. Supporters of marijuana reform say they'll hold a meeting next week on what they'll do next. One option is to start petition drives all across the state of Kansas. A Democratic state senator who opposed the ballot question that legalized recreational marijuana was named Wednesday to the regulatory board that will oversee the cannabis industry in Massachusetts, according to a report in the Associated Press. Senator Jennifer Flanagan of Leominster is the first appointee by Republican Governor Charlie Baker, who also opposed legalization, to the five-member Cannabis Control Commission. The governor, in a statement, touted Flanagan's experience in the legislature on issues involving substance abuse prevention, treatment, and recovery as invaluable to the state's goal of, quote, "effective, responsible, and safe implementation of the adult use of marijuana," end quote. The commission will oversee both recreational and medical marijuana. Jim Borgasani, a spokesman for the group that led the drive to legalize recreational pot, noted that Baker earlier tapped Walpole Police Chief John Carmichael Jr., an outspoken opponent of marijuana legalization, for an advisory board that will make recommendations to the regulatory commission. Women Grow, the industry networking group founded in Denver in 2014, has become the latest prominent cannabis community organization to join the Disown Stone movement, a loosely organized group of activists and organizations boycotting the upcoming Cannabis World Congress and Business Expos in Los Angeles and Boston for their selection of Donald Trump advisor Roger Stone as a keynote speaker. Women Grow CEO Kay Nieshoff, in a post on Facebook, said CWCBE's response to complaints by the Minority Cannabis Business Association, quote, offended Women Grow's code of conduct, adding, quote, offensive and discriminatory conduct is not tolerated in the Women Grow community. We expect better from our members, sponsors, and strategic partners, and we stand with those who have taken action against such conduct, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Headline News.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
This is the Cannabis Minority Report. The war on drugs has been called the new Jim Crow for how it disproportionately polices and incarcerates people of color. As marijuana legalization proceeds, institutional barriers still prevent minorities from fully participating in the new industry. Today, we take a deeper look at these issues in the Cannabis Minority Report.
Welcome to another edition of the Minority Cannabis Report. I'm Russ Belville, and joining me today, we have three guests, two of whom are the co-founders of the Tribal Cannabis Consulting, TCC. It's Cassandra Dittus and Joseph Dice joining us. We also have Lori Tom. She's the chairman of the Yerington Paiute Tribe. And all three of you, welcome so much to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Cassandra, I want to start with you because a lot of people that are following the marijuana issue are following it as it goes state by state, and different states are choosing to either legalize or have medical marijuana. But lost in the discussion sometimes are the discussions of the sovereign Native American tribes, as they're supposed to be in our system. And there's a lot of overlap between federal and state and tribal law. Tell us what you're doing with Tribal Cannabis Consulting to help untangle some of these issues.
The biggest issues that we've worked with Tribal Cannabis Consulting is helping the tribes that we work with get on the same level of robust regulatory framework that the same states are working within. So to do so, you know, they need to be able to issue their own medical cards. They need to be able to monitor their own registry. They need to be able to license their own dispensaries, produce their own medicine, that type of thing, where it's, in order to do that, they need regulatory codes, job descriptions for the government agents, and then as well, when they want to get into the business side of things, they're also responsible for that side. So the form of consulting that we do is a little bit different in that we help on the broader aspect of regulatory components for the tribes, as well as going down to the detailed sides of businesses. So the tribes have gone through more rigorous process of adopting regulatory codes, issuing their own medical marijuana cards. The Ely Shoshone and the Yerington Paiute tribes are actually the first tribes in the nation that have reciprocity with the state of Nevada, meaning that their medical marijuana cards are recognized in state dispensaries and by state government agencies as well. So they've taken the steps of really putting the groundwork in place that all of the states that have done to this point, as well as taking the extra step and going into SB 375, which allowed the governor to compact with tribes on their Native American marijuana programs.
Joseph, I'm wondering, looking at the press release, it's saying you're doing a lot of work there in Nevada with the tribes there, and as the state government has rolled out its marijuana legalization, how is that impacting how the tribes may move forward as far as the recreational market goes?
You know, one of the biggest things with the states moving forward, and it seems to happen in a lot of states with the tribes being overlooked, is there, when the states enact marijuana laws, they're bringing marijuana literally to the doorsteps of the tribes. So they have to address it with law and order codes. Some choose to, you know, ban it outright, or others choose to enter into the industry with their own robustly regulated system. The tribes we're working with, and what we do, is help tribes that do want to regulate that either direction come up with a really robust law and order code and a program of issuance for cards and their complete setup start to finish.
Now, Lori Tom, with the Yerington Paiute tribe, oftentimes when this discussion does bubble up to the surface for, you know, mainstream consideration, it seems to me as if Native American tribes are treated monolithically, as if they all think and act the same way. Can you give us some idea as to some of the intra-tribal or inter-tribal differences that that you've found when it comes to embracing or rejecting marijuana policy?
You're correct in that. I think that's the overall look. And when they talk about tribes, we're all kind of bunched in and clumped in together. And like Joe said, the tribes are able to regulate individually. We can come up with our own set of law and order codes that are individual and customized for our own communities, because we have so many different parts of land that we, our reservations are on, from fee land to trust land to other types of land that have been transferred underneath our jurisdiction. So we do have to understand a number of things and how this will affect our tribal members. And the reason I think we're so unique is when tribes usually come down and set these laws and these law and order codes, they'll have community outreach meetings. They'll listen to the tribal members, because in a tribal setting, it's the tribal members that actually are the governing body, if you really think about it, and that we're just the speakers and leaders that they've elected to take their voice and let that be heard and go forward with the projects that they would like us to go forward with.
In speaking with tribal leaders, and this would be a question for anyone who would like to address it, how much of the unique or amplified issues in Native American communities, I'm thinking of things like alcoholism, housing, mass unemployment, how much does the industry of marijuana focus into trying to convince tribal leaders to get on board with marijuana reform, the jobs that could be created, the alternatives, methods of medical treatment, for example?
Okay, so I guess what we've looked at the Yerington Paiute tribe is the prior council had community outreach meetings, and a number of those items were discussed. And what we had decided is that it came down to a decision of equal access to medicine. For Native Americans, we fall under a different class. As we know, we are sovereign nations. But we wanted to make sure that those patients and those individuals that needed the medication that others were getting access to, why would we deny that from our people? Again, if these are economic development decisions that some tribes have to make depending on what project they're going to take forward, yes, there is going to be a creation of tribes. Yes, there of jobs, sorry, and that there will be an influx of other types of funds, basically taxation, all those other things that'll come in, and it'll fund some of those very, very underserved, underfunded programs that tribes have struggled with and how to address this. The social issues, we were talking about that within our community members, and I think that's always going to be an issue, because no matter what product or item that comes onto the reservation, whether it be cigarettes or alcohol, the like, there's a chance for abuse at any point, but if you have a strictly regulated program, we believe that we could protect our members in that same process while we regulate.
Cassandra or Joseph, did you have any thoughts on that issue of how we lobby for marijuana reforms specifically to Native American tribes to address their issues?
You know, part of that goes into what was addressed with SB 375 in the compacting that the tribes in the state of Nevada did. And that they, in the compacting process, agreed to collect the same taxes that the state would be collecting for their marijuana programs. Okay. But those taxes will additionally return to the tribal government and additionally go towards either social programs or essential government services. So the tribes agreed, as part of the compacting with the state, to collect those taxes, but then to, as they reallocate those resources, make them go to essential services and government.
Excellent, excellent. Now, in speaking with members of other minority communities, particularly African Americans and Latinos, there's a big consideration of how, as the legalization movement is unfolding, the jobs and the ownership seem to be going to white folks and not the people who disproportionately got busted for the crimes when it was prohibited. Within the Native American, these compacts you're talking about and these agreements, is that a consideration of having, you know, more Native ownership? Is this going to be maybe a roadmap for other groups to look at?
You know, it is. And just one other thing I wanted to reiterate on what Cassandra said about the taxes staying with the tribe. That was not a concession. It was an agreement to keep the playing field level, you know, so that the tribes didn't have an unfair competitive advantage. The taxes, yes, go to the government, just like the states do. And as far as jobs, you know, most of the Senator Fagerblum, when he was the sponsor of SB 375, and at the ceremonial signing, he actually touched on that issue about how this is going to go a long way to break up the monopoly that's traditionally by the, you know, rich or white males that have dominated this industry, and get it passed down into some of the hands of the tribes and other minorities that have been left out of this industry that have actually been the main victims of the failed drug war.
Cassandra, this is a deep issue with a lot of nuance and far more than we can cover in this short interview period. So do you have any contact information or informational websites people could visit to maybe learn more about these issues?
TribalCannabisConsulting.com is our website. You can always talk with us there. But, you know, people that want to stay informed, I honestly recommend setting up Google Alerts on different issues that they're looking to follow. It's something that is a unique resource for us, but it offers people the opportunity to really cater in what type of news is coming their way. So I always encourage that for people that are looking for specifics on this type of industry.
And Lori, do you have any websites or informational sites people could use to learn more about these tribal issues?
So what we've done is we've, again, partnered with the Tribal Cannabis Consultants, and that we were asking that all of our information go through them because being so new in this industry, there are so many other programs that are trying to contact the tribes directly, and that would kind of violate our non-disclosure.
Oh, understood. Yes. Okay. And go ahead. Go ahead.
If people wanted to also, when they go to tribalcannabisconsulting.com, they can contact us on there and get put on our mailing list. We regularly put updates or anything new that's going on with us or with the industry, and we're always available for questions via email. There's a contact us section on the webpage.
All right. That's excellent information. Thank you so much to Cassandra Dittus and Joseph Dice from Tribal Cannabis Consulting and Lori Tom, the chairman of the Yerington Paiute Tribe in Nevada. Thanks so much for being here and informing us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you're a cannabis brand looking to build trust and awareness within the community, consider becoming a sponsor of this program. Your message will be seen and heard by the most dedicated followers of marijuana policy reform, who are loyal and supportive of those brands that give back to the community. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button to learn how your brand can also be featured in my live nationwide appearances. Thank you for your support.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
One of the largest cannabis business expos on the planet, Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo, or CWCBE, is facing backlash over its selection of a controversial ally of Donald Trump as its keynote speaker, sparking a boycott movement and the social media hashtag Disown Stone. It all has to do with Roger Stone. He's a self-described political dirty trickster whose earliest shenanigans was telling fellow school children a lie that Richard Nixon would institute school on Saturdays if he were elected in 1960. Stone then converted to conservatism during Barry Goldwater's doomed 1964 run and later became a member of Nixon's infamous CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President, and at age 19 was the youngest person to testify in the hearings over CREEP's Watergate burglary scandal. By the 1980s, Stone had been mentored by Lee Atwater, the architect of the so-called Southern Strategy that used rhetorical code to appeal to white racist voters. Atwater had successfully deployed Reagan-Bush-era talking points about Cadillac-driving welfare queens and a crack baby epidemic and the scaremongering Willie Horton ad. Atwater explained his tactics in a 1981 interview, and I apologize right up front, but from here on out, the language gets offensive and salty, but I'm not going to censor it because I want you to know exactly what kind of person Roger Stone is. This is his mentor in 1981 who said, quote, "You start out in 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger. That hurts you. It backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff, and you're getting so abstract. Now you're talking about cutting taxes, and all these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and a byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. We want to cut this is much more abstract than even the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than nigger, nigger." End quote. In 2000, Stone was instrumental in assuring the Supreme Court's selection of George W. Bush as president, thanks to his incitement of the so-called Brooks Brothers riot, where pro-Bush protesters stormed election offices and halted the Miami-Dade presidential vote recount. Now, Atwater's protege, Roger Stone, has formed a nonprofit called the U.S. Cannabis Coalition, with the goal of finding bipartisan solutions to ending marijuana prohibition, and touting his closeness to Donald Trump as a potential means of generating positive cannabis support from the White House. It's for that reason that CWCBE has invited him to keynote. Now look, it's not that Stone is a conservative disciple of Nixon, Atwater, Reagan, Bush, or even that he supports Donald Trump that has some activists boycotting CWCBE. It's Stone's own racism and misogyny that he routinely employs in the service of the conservative agenda that makes him unfit for a speaking role. Now, Media Matters for America has documented some of Stone's more offensive comments, where he's fallen somewhat short of Atwater's admonition to speak in subtle racist code, and again, offensive language follows. In 2008, Stone pushes a rumor that there is a tape on which Michelle Obama can be heard criticizing Whitey. No such tape or quote has ever been proven to exist. 2011, Stone explains how former presidential candidate Herman Cain is, quote, definitely blacker, end quote, than MSNBC's Reverend Al Sharpton. In 2016, Stone tweets that CNN commentator Roland Martin is a, quote, stupid Negro, end quote, and a, quote, fat Negro, end quote. 2016, Stone tweets that MSNBC's Reverend Al Sharpton is a, quote, professional Negro, end quote, who likes fried chicken. 2016, Stone tweets that Herman Cain is, quote, a Mandingo, end quote. 2016, Stone tweets that Roland Martin is a, quote, token, end quote. 2016, Stone says he convinced Donald Trump, quote, there's a lot of questions, end quote, about Barack Obama's birth certificate. Now, Roger Stone is even less subtle when it comes to denigrating women. In 2011, Stone alleges that commentator, quote, Arianna Huffington has the hots for Herman Cain and wants to do him, end quote, then referred to Huffington as hashtag hot Greek, and Cain as hashtag hung American, end quote. 2014, Stone tweets that Florida politician Barbara Stern is a, quote, self-important nasty cunt, end quote. 2015, Stone forms the anti-Hillary Clinton PAC called Citizens United Not Timid, or C-U-N-T, after he admits he spent, quote, hours trying to come up with words for B-I-T-C-H and just couldn't do it, end quote. 2016, Stone tweets that journalist Jill Abramson should, quote, die, bitch, in all caps, end quote. 2016, Stone tweets that New York Times columnist Gail Collins is, end quote, elitist cunt, end quote. And 2016, Stone tweets that Fox News' Megyn Kelly has a, quote, nice set of cans, end quote. Stone is also an equal opportunity bigot who is easily able to denigrate the Latino, LGBT, disabled, and Muslim communities as well. In 2015, Stone tweets that CNN's Roland Martin and Anna Navarro are, quote, quota hires, end quote. 2016, Stone tweets that, quote, black beans and rice didn't miss, end quote, CNN's Anna Navarro. 2016, Stone's tweet calls MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, quote, Rachel the Muff Diver, end quote. 2016, Stone mocks paralyzed conservative Charles Krauthammer by telling him to, quote, stand the fuck up, end quote. 2016, Stone alleges that Gold Star father Khazir Khan wants to, quote, initiate Sharia law, end quote, in America. And Stone isn't shy about inciting violence against his political enemies. In 2012, Stone twice offers, quote, $1,000 bounty to anyone who punches out MSNBC's Chris Matthews, end quote. 2014, Stone tweets, and he's since deleted this tweet, that, quote, Hillary Clinton should be executed for murder, end quote. 2014, Stone tweets that Senator Bernie Sanders is a, quote, Soviet agent, end quote, who, quote, should be arrested for treason and shot, end quote. 2016, Stone argues in his book that Bill and Hillary Clinton are, quote, plausibly responsible for the deaths, end quote, of roughly 40 people. And just today, Roger Stone, in a discussion with TMZ, intimated that anybody, any representative or senator who voted for the impeachment of Donald Trump would be likely to be murdered by angry mobs. This disown Stone boycott was started when Jesse Horton, the African-American man who heads the Minority Cannabis Business Association, withdrew from his speaking spot at CWCBE, citing Stone's legacy of hatred. In response, CWCBE's Scott Giannotti told Horton, quote, how dumb you people are, end quote, and alleged Horton was only withdrawing because of allegiance to competitors, quote, all white conferences, end quote. But while the MCBA, the Cannabis Industry Journal, and established activism heavyweights like Dr. Amanda Ryman and now the Women Grow Organization are rejecting CWCBE and supporting the boycott, not everyone in the cannabis community agrees. John Morgan, the wealthy trial lawyer who helped bankroll Florida's medical marijuana amendment, told Politico by email, quote, it's a mistake. Roger has the president's ear. Politics is not pretty. Sometimes politics makes strange bedfellows. This is such a time. With the stroke of a pen, Trump could make marijuana Schedule II, and it would be right, and his ratings would soar, end quote. Mark Emery, the Canadian seed impresario and activist, told me by Twitter, quote, disagree with you on that, Radical Russ Belville. Morgan's pragmatism on working with White House advisor, the effective strategy, end quote. Dan Humiston, the head of CWCBE, told Cannabis Industry Journal, quote, I think he is an asset to this movement. He has raised a lot of money. He is pushing Jeff Sessions really hard, and he's got Donald Trump's ear, end quote. Look, strange bedfellows is one thing. I have cannabis activist allies who disagree with me vehemently on gun policy, abortion rights, military spending, immigration enforcement, socialized medicine, Middle East negotiations, gay rights, and many more issues. But none of my allies so casually calls people Negroes, cunts, mandingos, bitches, tokens, muff divers, and quota hires. None of my allies would be comfortable leveraging the hatred of people who think like that to justify progress on marijuana reform. One of the biggest issues we are facing as we move into legalization is this phenomenon of blacks did time, whites make dimes. How people of color were disproportionately targeted and punished for marijuana sales during prohibition, and now they're shut out of profiting from marijuana sales under legalization. In that context, placing Roger Stone on a pedestal at one of the largest cannabis industry conferences in the world is the apotheosis of cannabis community color blindness and tone deafness. Disown Stone. That's all the time I got for today. Thanks for joining us. That rant will be on hightimes.com tomorrow. Please share it far and wide and join the hashtag Disown Stone. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you